This is Joe Pelarchi and Sue Shepherd talking to Peter Riddleston on the 25th of April 2012 at his home in Port Slade. And could we start with your date and place of birth?
Yes, I was born on the 29th of September 1929. I was born in Rushington in West Sussex on a, well, it was a private nursery. It was attached to a big house that belonged to a timber importer by the name of Rubinstein. And he was a very keen gardener. And he had a commercial nursery as well, which is where my father worked. And I was born in one of the tied cottages in the nursery. I don't know the date that we left Rustington, because I suppose I was too young to remember dates then, but I can remember being there. But from there, my father got a job in a tomato nursery in Essex, Ardley in Essex, near Colchester. And we finished up in a tiny bungalow in the corner of a field which belonged to the nursery, way out in the wilds. I've actually been and found it about 3 or 4 years ago. Went and had a look at it. I think the only difference now to when I lived in it was the fact that they've now got electricity and main drainage, I think. It doesn't look a great different. I knocked on the door and spoke to the lady. She said it still belonged to the nursery. But my mother didn't like being out there. So from there, my father got a job in Brighton in Hazeldine's nursery up Dyke Road. If you remember that, it's where Hazeldine Meads is up the Dyke Road. And if you go up there now, you'll see on the estate, there's a this big monkey puzzle tree which stood outside Mrs. Hazeldine's front door, and it's still there. Before that, perhaps I ought to say that my father was obviously a gardener and nurseryman, and his father was a gardener in private service, which is where my father went into private service locally in the village where he lived in Suffolk, Stoke-upon-Aland. And from there, when you're in service, you sort of used to move from one place to another. And he finished up at one time working for Lady Astor at Cliveden, or Cliveden as they call it. And not in Perfumo's time, I might add. And my mother was working in the house, that's how they met. So that's where they came from.
And what brought the family to Brighton?
Well, my father got a job at Hazeldine's nursery, which was up Dyke Road, and we lived in Kingsley Road in Preston. Lived there in number 58 for a while, and then we moved further down the terrace in Kingsley. Do you know Kingsley Road?
No.
We moved further down the terrace to 54, which my father bought. A huge sum of, I think it was about £350-400, I think. A house, two bedroom house.
How old were you when you moved there, roughly?
I suppose, well, 1936. So I was 6 when we moved there, I suppose. Yes, I started school at Ardley in Essex when I was 5, and then came to Brighton, as I say, 1936. 1937, my father, as I say, he was working at Hazeldine's nursery, and they sold a piece of their ground, which used to extend from Dyke Road right the way back through to the road behind, which is Widdean Road, and they sold the frontage on Withdean Road for building, which made the nursery smaller. So obviously they didn't need so many staff. So my father, being one of the last in, was one of the first out. And one of the other chaps who was there, who was stood off at the same time as my father, he got a job on the Brighton Parks Department. And they wouldn't take my father in those days because he wasn't a Brightonian. So he went on to private gardening, and that's what he done until he retired. Worked in the Dyke Road area of Brighton.
And what were your early memories of Preston Park?
I suppose when, well, we used to play there. We used to go into there from school, which was in North Road in Preston. Used to go there from school for games and that sort of thing. I remember we used to go to the cycle track up there for the all of Brighton school sports. We used to march around with their banners like a mini Olympics. We never used to get anywhere because we were a very small school. And well, the park was just there, I suppose. The rock garden was built, I think it was 1928-29, so that was, well, it was about the time I was born, so obviously it was there when we came to Brighton. That was always very attractive.
What do you remember about the rock garden at that time?
The waterfall and the illuminations at night, I suppose, really.
It must have been magical.
Oh, it was. Yes, it was lovely.
Did you spend much time there? You know,
Oh, we used to go down there, you know, sort of Saturdays and that, and play football with school friends and that sort of thing. We used to go and play on the tank that was there, the First World War tank. That was in the park until the Second World War, and they took it for metal scrap. That was, let me show you on the map. That's a chalet.
Yeah.
It was there in this shrub triangle there, and it was along that there, sort of facing this way.
Okay, so that's north of the park, near the entrance to the St. Peter's Church. North of the park,
yeah,
I see it.
There on the triangle to the north of the chalet. That was, you know, a First World War tank, one of these sort of oblong objects with sort of round ends, painted grey.
Oh, wonderful.
And that was obviously taken away for scrap during the war.
And did you just have the freedom to go to the park with your friends?
Oh, yes. Yes, I used to go out in the morning and come back when you was hungry. Well, didn't have to have any sort of parents looking after you in those days. Not there is today, I'm afraid.
And I suppose there wasn't the busy road in the same way.
No.
So the rock garden was then actually more accessible, was it, from the park? Because now you have to wait for ages to cross the road and people don't even always realise it's there.
No, oh no. Well, there is a speed limit down there, I know, but I mean, a lot of people don't actually see the rock garden, do they? They just go past it, looking where they're going, supposedly.
How else was the park different at the time that you first remember it than it is now?
Well, I suppose I didn't take a sort of notice of the park that I would now, having worked on the Parks Department. I didn't view it in that sort of light before. Um, The Rose Garden was there. Six bowling greens were there. And that playground wasn't there. And no, it wasn't. It wasn't a great deal different, really.
What were your favourite areas, other than the tank?
I don't know if there was any particular. Any particular favourite area?
Was it gated at that? Was it? Was there a railing round it at that time? Fence round it?
Oh, I thought there was these. I mean, I think from looking through books that there was originally these very high sort of cast iron railings, but I seem to remember the railings that I were there were those about 4.5-5 foot, just these ordinary bow top railings were there, which were taken away. They were all round. I think there was a gate there. Above
that's
the triangle there by the by the blind garden,
the northwest entrance
and,
to the park.
Yeah, and all the way down in front of these elm trees, right the way down, right beyond the bowling greens.
All bordering the A23. Yeah.
Well, no, inside the inside road, the railings, this grass verge. Where all the flower beds was. There weren't any railings to there, I don't think.
Okay. So there, it wasn't, didn't have railings all the way round, just on, I mean, did they have
I can't really remember.
No. Okay.
Before the war, up the Gallop, up that way, we never used to venture up that far, I don't think, I don't remember.
And then the railings were all taken down for any metal anywhere
was
taken, wasn't it, during the war?
Yes, they took it all from all private houses. Cast iron gates and railings were taken.
What about lighting in the park at that, well, in the early times that you remember it? Did it have those big things on the tops of the gateposts that were lit up at night?
Oh, those on top of those dolphin lamps.
Yes.
Yeah, they were alight before the war.
Yeah. Well, that was the only lighting in the park at that time, was it?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think the chalet might have been floodlit.
Mm. Okay.
Then came the war, I suppose.
Yeah, so coming to the war, what happened? Because I believe you were evacuated for a while.
Yeah, so I went up to Yorkshire in March 1941.
And why was that?
Well, because of the bombing in Brighton. Originally, on the outbreak of war, loads of evacuees came from London to Brighton. And when it was seen that there wasn't a great deal of bombing in Brighton, a lot of them filtered back, a lot of them left school and went back. And when the bombing started to get more pronounced in Brighton, I suppose they decided that we would have to go.
Weren't there bombs that dropped near Preston Park?
Yes, there was. I found the photos of that. Opposite the Vicarage bowling greens in Preston Park. There we are.
Oh,
there's
yes.
Preston Village.
Yes, I see.
There's Britain's Garage, which
yes,
now Caffin's.
Yes. Soon to be Sainsbury's.
And the bomb that dropped in there and fractured the gas main, so there was this column of flame we could see from our bedroom up Kingsley Road. You know, we could look across and see these flames.
And that was the 8th of March 1941.
Yeah, and we went away on the 19th. Mm. That was Gravely's grocer's store.
That's on the corner.
On the corner, that's Unwin's, I think, last I saw. On the corner of Lauriston Road was Holes and Davidor Dairy. And then I think there was a little shop in there. I don't know what that was. But this big one here was Kirby's, an ironmonger's.
Okay.
And then Britain's Garage.
Yeah.
But Britain's Garage, when all this was knocked down, it then took the land from Cumberland Road, is it?
Cumberland Road to Lauriston Road, didn't it? That's right.
And that's, as far as I know, what Caffins, as it is now, have got, isn't it? The piece between the two roads.
That's, this building's still there, I think. Oh, no, you're right. Absolutely right. Yes, it is. It's the whole thing. It's now Sainsbury's, so it's going to be Sainsbury's soon. Mm. Yes.
Where are they going to park then?
In the same car park that was used to park the vehicles for Caffin's Garage.
Mm. Mm. And there's another.
What, when those bombs fell, do you remember anything about the atmosphere at that time, what people were feeling, saying?
I don't know what they were feeling, I knew what I was feeling.
What was that?
When this one dropped in Scarborough Road, that was before the one down in the village.
Yes.
This is Scarborough Road, you know where that is? Up, you know, Black Hill from the dog's home?
Oh, yes, yes.
That's a turning off of there, the second one up.
I see, yes.
The Scarborough Road and then Kingsley Road and then Hampstead Road, which leads down to Preston Park Station.
I got you.
Well, this house, there was three houses there. Mm. Bomb landed straight in the middle. These houses are the back, the east side of Kingsley Road.
Right.
And these houses here, up on a terrace, our house was two doors away from that one.
Wow.
So that must, we were all sleeping downstairs at the time, and my brother and I were in a bed in the front room, and when this bomb dropped, the door blew up off right up the hallway, and all the windows came in all over us, and there was a right to do.
I bet there was. That must have been very frightening.
Chap who used to go to the boys brigade with, he lived in there, he was killed. About the same age as me.
That's tragic.
And as I say, I was the only one who, you weren't compelled to go, but I was the only one from the little Preston school who went. There were two or three others who went away who'd got relations in the country, in Sussex and Hampshire and places like that. They went to their relatives, but I went with the Stamford Road School.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was several boys in the area, lived in Preston, in Robertson Road, Kingsley, Scarborough, who were at Stamford Road. And I went with Stamford Road School.
Mm.
But that's another story in itself.
How long were you evacuated? How long were you away?
Well, I went from the beginning of 1941 and came back in November 1943. I had a letter of introduction to Captain McLaren from one of my father's employees who had a big house up Dyke Road Avenue. I think it's a care home, rest home at the moment, on the corner of Hill Brow. It belonged to the wife of the family that started the Providence scheme in Bradford.
Really?
The Waddy Loves, yeah. And she had that house built, and the gardens of that extended right the way down to Hill Drive, which has since been sold off and built on. But I had a letter to go to the Parks Department. So I went to see the legendary Captain McLaren.
What was your impression of him?
Well, he seemed to be the sort of chap who, if he said you was going to do something, you were going to be doing it. And he was very nice. He said, "Well, you look a good, strong lad." And he said, he'd previously asked me what my father was doing, and I said he was in the desert somewhere in North Africa. And he said, again, he said, "I'm not supposed to take you on because you're not Brightonians." Because in those days, the council corporation work, different departments, and the gas company, and the electricity company, and the railway works, or the railway itself, it was all father and son jobs. If you hadn't got anybody in the family already there, then you had a job to get in there. So, but he said, "Your father's out in the army doing his bit." He said, I'll give you a start temporary." I said, "Thank you very much." So I started work on the 8th of November, 1943.
Do you remember that day?
I do.
What were you doing?
I went to the office at Molescombe Place on my father's bike, because he was away, he didn't want it, and I was big enough to ride it then. His nice new boots and my tarpaulin lunch bag. And the chap who was, well, he was later deputy director, a chap by the name of Mr. Dyson, he was a technical officer in those days. He said, "Right, I'll take you out to where you're going to start work, to the vicarage." So I said, "Well, I don't know where the vicarage is." So he said, "Well, where do you live?" I said, "I live in Preston." "Well," he said, "you know Preston Drove?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, it's the two bowling greens at the bottom of there." I said, "Oh, I didn't know it was called the vicarage." So he hadn't got a car. There was only three people who had cars during the war in the office at Molescombe Place. That was the McLaren and Everson, who was his deputy, and the chief clerk, Mr. Walker, because I couldn't get petrol those days. And he said, "Well, I haven't got a car." He said, "You know where it is?" I said, "Yeah, I know where it is now." So he got on the bus, and I rode my bike behind the bus, and we got out to the vicarage in Preston Park, or the top of Preston Park. And then he introduced me to the chap who was in charge of this small gang of elderly fellas, who was made up, because bearing in time it's wartime still, most of the fit men have been taken into the war or into the Civil Defence Corps. And this was a sort of scratch gang that was made up, take one from one part, one from another, and make this gang up to go round the bowling greens in Brighton doing the winter treatment, the scarifying, hollow tining, top dressing. And I still maintain that springbok raking a bowling green by hand is still the hardest job in horticulture, and I don't care who says any different. So that's where we were at the vicarage. From there we moved into Preston Park and done those.
So this was still during the war, obviously.
Oh yeah. Yeah, this was November 1943. And then
were the Canadians here by that time?
They weren't there then. When it came payday, Mr. Walker, who was the chief clerk, he used to come round in his car with his little leather Gladstone bag and open it up, and the staff would assemble I think it was Friday those days, and all the staff in this area, from the rock garden, from the Vicarage bowling greens, from the manor, and from the cricket ground, would assemble in the building is still there. There's a rebuilt flint and brick building in the corner up there before these houses were built. This was a parks depot,
okay.
A rookery depot, they called it.
So it's just next door to the rock garden? Yeah.
No, the rock garden's here. We had a pathway along the back. We used to come from there to there.
Okay.
And everybody, you just sort of got these pay packets out, and they were just paper money bags with the money put in and a little slip of paper clipped off off a ledger with how much there was on it, and he'd just sort of throw it out on the table as though he was the master of everything. And he had a look round. He said, "Anybody else?" I said, "Yes, sir, me." "Who are you?" "My name's Riddleston." "When did you start?" I said, "Monday." "Well, none for you this week," he said. And I suppose I must have looked a bit down in the mouth, to say the least. He closed the bag, off he went. No explanation. So when we got outside, the foreman, he was well past retirement. He'd sort of been brought back during the war to look after this gang, a chap named Alec Wilson. He was a Scotsman. Always had a bright red cardigan under his coat, so you could see him a mile off when he was coming. And he said, "Well, I'm very sorry about that," he said, "but I think that is my fault." And he explained the week in hand system, which nobody had told me. But he said, "I really didn't think it applied to boys." So I said, "Oh." So there was me, my father's in the army, and I'm going to keep the family and no money. So when we went back into the shed to put tools away and it back up, the eight people who had been there, they gave me 4 shillings between them. They all gave me sixpence. And when you think about it, when I got my proper wages the following week, it was 17 and tuppence halfpenny, which is, what's that? That's 16 shillings, just over 16 shillings, isn't it? So what these people had given me was virtually a quarter of a week's wages.
That sounds brilliant.
And one of them, who was there, who was a foreman on the rock garden, a chap named Len Poulton, he was there, and I later worked with him in the Stanmer Nurseries and later became his deputy as deputy manager. When he retired.
Can you tell me what the park looked like at that time during the war? I've heard that there were army vehicles in the park at that time, is that right?
Yes, during the war time, or later on during the war, sort of round about D-Day time, pre-D-Day, all along this, there weren't any under the cover of the trees, so they started there.
That's the northwest
side. Northwest end, under the trees, all the way down, and right the way down under the trees to the bowling greens until the trees stopped, and then they stopped. They were all, that was all Canadian regiment.
So that's all where it's parallel to the A-23.
Yeah, Manitoba Dragoons they were. And in the gallop, under the cover of the trees, they were English. They were the Royal Artillery all up in there. They had their big wagons and guns.
Okay.
And they used to store their shells in, that's the men's bowls pavilion.
Right. Yes.
In there, which was another building that McLaren designed. And when we went, the day, you know, the after D-Day, they'd just gone that night. Everything moved out at night, and there wasn't a scrap of lit or anything left, apparently.
Amazing.
They just went.
So what else was different about the park, apart from the vehicles that you've mentioned?
This area here, on the east side of the chalet,
yep.
That was all allotments.
Okay. All right up to the clock tower, between the chalet and the clock tower.
Pause for a photo.
You've got a photo?
Oh yes, I've got a photo of the allotment. There's a bigger one than that, isn't it? There's the London Road.
Yes.
There's the chalet. There's the clock. And there's the allotments.
Who would look after the allotments?
Well, the people who took the plots, the public.
Oh, right. So they were like the other, like other areas of allotments then.
Oh, yes. It was a
water. Dig for victory sort of thing.
Dig for victory. That's right. Mm. I've got a dig for victory leaflet upstairs. The rest is still the same. You've got the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 bowling greens. Rose garden is the same.
Did you mention something about a tank? That is a water tank.
Yes, the water tank. The water tank was down there,
okay.
Just to the north of the tile house.
Yes.
Went across there, not right from path to path, but in the middle of there.
Okay, so sort of between the tile house and the A23 sort of area.
Yeah. It's sort of about like that.
Okay.
And there used to be a red brick surface air raid shelter with a flat concrete top on there by that triangle.
Right.
And
I believe the bricks still come up every now and again when it's dry.
So they say. Who was it? And there's a picture of the tanks after they'd been waterproofed going through this emergency water tank.
That's huge.
Oh yes, it was, and it was usually full. I mean, they lowered it because they knocked a bit of the brickwork off the side, and the engineers put a ramp up. They put one there and then drive straight through, and another one out the other end. And then when they finished, they bricked it up again after D-Day, and then topped it up again.
Okay.
That's the tile house there.
Yeah.
And you can see where it is in relation to all these allotments, patchy bits, all up there. I can't see if there's allotments on there. I can't see that on there.
I think it's just off the shot of that one. But I can see them very clearly on this photograph.
See the allotments there?
Yes.
This is taken on March 12, 1948. Well, that would have been filled in by then.
So,
I didn't
realise
the allotments stayed that long. See the allotments here? They ride up the top of those trees, right up round the clock, aren't they?
Yes, they are. That just might be a ghost of the image of where they were.
Might be.
I don't know, but it's clearly seen there.
Yeah.
Interesting.
There was, in the Royal Pavilion Gardens at that time, a demonstration allotment, which was worked by our staff to show people what to do and when. It was a size of a 10-rod allotment. 90 by 30, just inside, left-hand side, just inside the north gate.
Oh yes.
And that was looked after by our staff.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that the vehicles understandably went at on D-Day. And then that was
the night before, yeah.
The night before. But before that, there was the Dieppe raid, wasn't there, that the Canadian soldiers went over.
Yeah, I think they were... I don't remember anything at all about that in Brighton.
Oh, no?
They went from New Haven, didn't they?
Okay, that wasn't part of the park then, the Canadian...
No.
Oh, okay, it's just D-Day, fine. Maybe a bit more about Captain McLaren.
Yes, yes. How was Captain McLaren as your boss? What do you remember about him and his plans for the park?
Well, not a lot really. At my lowly status as a boy, I mean, you would see him, and he would always speak to you and want to know how you were getting on and did you like it and that sort of thing, but. You wouldn't know what was sort of going.
Remind us what Captain McLaren did to the park.
Well, as
he was
a
huge influence, wasn't he?
Yes,
lots of things.
It was more or less like this when I went there, but I think he designed the Ladies' Bowls Pavilion. I know he designed the Rose Garden and the Rotunda.
Didn't he arrange that to be brought from?
I don't know. I think you told me about that. Yeah. I know the tile house came from sort of an Ideal Home exhibition or that type of thing. It was constructed by a tile manufacturer that was bought there. He designed and built the Men's Bowls Pavilion there, and also it's not on there, the one at the Vicarage. That one he done.
Did he do this pathway along here by the tennis courts? Did he?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
That was always there.
Yeah.
Pre-war.
Okay.
McLaren, he done the rock garden.
McLaren supervised the building of the rock garden. No, couldn't have done, could he?
Oh yeah.
Did he? Oh yes, he did.
He designed it. And contrary to common belief, I think it's newspaper got the idea that it was done to the willow pattern. It wasn't at all. And they built it by the rock all came from Cheshire by rail, and at the top of the embankment there, they knocked a hole in the wall and the railway put the line so that you could get right up close to the wall, and they sort of sledged or rolled or whatever these big pieces of rock down into position. I didn't see them because it was built before we came to Brighton, but I've worked with chaps on this gang of oldish fellas, and they said they used to have somebody down on the main road when they were rolling these stones down in case one went down on its own. They used to be on the roadside with a red flag, you know, to stop the traffic. I don't think health and safety would have a different idea of that nowadays.
Were there stories that went around about how the park had developed over the years, like that?
No, I never came across anybody that was involved in the making of the Rose Garden, because I think pre-war also they used to use unemployed labour as doing a lot of the labouring. They would have skilled park staff supervising what they were doing, but they employed a lot of unemployed people. In fact, up the nursery where I worked after leaving Preston Park, which was up at Rodale, that is, I think it's Brentwood Road nowadays. That is where the nursery was. But right at the end of the nursery, there was a massive big wooden hut. And it was always referred to as the labour hut. And I asked why, and they said that is where the the unemployed, well, they weren't unemployed then, but they were unemployed, came there and they were put to work from there. Unemployed hut. But as far as design and that, that is not a lot different.
How long were you actually working at Preston Park for?
Well, we went to the seafront. It was the end of 1943 or start of 1944. Taking down the barbed wire. They were busting all these concrete tank, so stop tank, you know, stop an invasion. There was these big cubes of concrete, and Brighton were drilling holes in them, and Brighton was busy drilling holes in and putting shells in and blowing bits off of these things and then taking it away in lorry loads. Where Hove Corporation, they had a different idea. They got Hall's contractors, local contractors at the time, big contractors in Croydon, and they adapted several of their big lorries and to take these concrete blocks whole. They lifted them up bodily and one lorry took one block and they transported them up to where the railway cutting is, you know, Aldington Holt,
yes,
which used to be the Dyke Junction before the war. The railway used to branch off from there and go up to Devil's Dyke. And the railway used to come up round the side of what is it now? PC World, there. PC World and that big garage there. And it would go underneath Old Shoreham Road and right up the back and round up to the dyke. Well, Hove put all these blocks down in this cutting and filled it all in. It's all level up there now. So if anybody ever digs that up, they'll have a problem when they get below the soil level. But Brighton was chipping away and got rid of them in the end.
Did you go back to work at Preston Park?
I hadn't been at Preston Park previous to that. I went with this gang of we were called a landscape gang. But we'd done everything. We went from doing the bowling greens to down onto the seafront, relayed the both putting greens. That turf all came from Lancashire in foot squares. Sea washed turf came in coal trucks. One lot came because we used to work up until Saturday 12 o'clock and there was a mad scramble Saturday morning. This lot arrived in Brighton Saturday morning, the week before Whitsun, so we had to work all the weekend because this turf was stacked to the height of a coal wagon. Sort of living turf, I mean, and the bottom ones would be in a sorry state by the end of the holiday, and we had to get it all out.
Peter, before we leave Captain McLaren behind, you mentioned to me that he was a very strong character.
Oh yes, he was. He was a military man. I presume he must have been in the First War.
And what was his relationship with the council like? Who wore the boots, so to speak?
Well, I think McLaren did. I mean, in the history I think there was a falling out with the council over when he was on the Rock Garden because there was a florist by the name of Pratt, which had a shop at Preston Circus. I believe he was something to do with the council at the time, I'm not sure. But he set up this argument with McLaren because he was using some other contractors to get this, get the rock stone, where Mr. Pratt thought he could get it cheaper, I think. But I mean, he was a very strong-willed sort of a fella. He wouldn't take any nonsense from fish and chip merchants, as he used to call them. He was a real sort of man's man, you know. He would stand by his staff, whatever. I mean, he would give them an internal discipline for anything that they were due for, but that was the end of it. There was no malice after that. It was just you were told what was wrong and took what there was come in, and then after that he would back you against the outside world. Nobody wouldn't get anywhere near McLaren's staff.
Because he sounds a fantastic character. And he's left a lasting legacy in Preston Park. So I think we're quite very grateful to him, really.
So how did your career go on then after that? You were saying about the turf lane.
That was on the seafront, the turf lane.
Nice.
I'd done turf lane on the bowling greens in Preston Park.
So after the war, what were the
end of 1945, I went into the nursery up at Rodale.
Okay.
There was a nursery at Rodale. There was a small one at Molscombe Place on the Lewis Road behind the main office, which was a kitchen garden to the Molscombe house when it was a private house. And I went up to Rodale nursery until that closed when they built the council took over Stanmer 1945-46 from the Earl of Chichester. They took over the Stanmer estate, which at the time when they bought it, I believe, was about a little bit less than the size of the borough of Hove. There was Stanmer Village, there was Ballsdean, Standeen, where there was all got pumping stations on them. So the council buying it ensured the town had still got they owned the water supply, which was owned previously by the Chichesters.
What was your memories of Preston Park after the war?
I didn't have a great deal to do with Preston Park after the war, really. I was in either Rodale Nursery, and from there I went to Stanmer Nursery. And my career laid in the nursery.
Okay.
And the Stanmer estate, really.
But from a personal perspective rather than a professional perspective, do you remember Preston Park and things that it was used for after the war? Was there a big celebration?
Oh,
for instance?
There was all sorts of celebrations and events in Preston Park. Rose Garden was always good. I believe they've dug the whole lot out now and put old fashioned roses in there now, haven't they? Didn't they do that a little while ago? Not since I've been retired. I think they took the whole lot out, cut the yew hedge down, thinned it right down. But I understand it's all old what they call old fashioned roses now, where they all used to be mostly the old hybrid tea ones. It was lovely. The lily pond, and the McLaren designed that, the lily pond, and
the one by the rotunda.
By the rotunda and the garden itself. That figure where is it, a lion's head, where the water comes out for the lily pond?
Yep.
That came from what they call Brill's Baths in Brighton, which is, Brill's Baths was a well, what it says, it was baths, sort of swimming pool, and it had Turkish baths and slipper baths and all that sort of thing, I believe. It's where the, well, it's not even the Savoy Cinema now, is it? Is it the Cannon? I think it's a casino now, isn't it?
Is it?
Mm-hmm. Where the Savoy Cinema was.
Okay, okay.
You had one entrance in East Street at the top of the little road that comes up from Pool Valley.
I know.
And the other entrance on the seafront, and it was a big cinema.
Okay.
In fact, it was that big that the projection room was in the middle of the balcony. The downstairs was sort of like that. Then it was a balcony came down like that, and if you were in the front of the balcony, you were actually sitting on top of the projection room because it came out of the depth of the balcony. Massive place. And that's where that lion's head came from, apparently.
Are there any specific events in the park that you remember over the years?
Well, they used to have circuses, all sorts of sports days and things like that. And there was always the police sports up at the cycle track.
So it was a real focus for the community, was it?
Oh, yes.
They have horses there or something.
Well, I think originally, I've never seen any plans with it on, but I think the cricket ground and the cycle track, I think that area was the what they call the lawns and polo grounds. And I suppose that's where they used to have the matches, because I can remember before the war seeing and playing polo, as I thought, maybe they were just practicing on the piece between the chalet and the clock tower. Mm. They used to play polo there, all the officers from Preston Barracks. Mm.
I did hear somebody say something about there used to be a motor rally sometimes gathering there. Do you remember that at all?
No, I don't remember that. Okay. I can remember an RAC hill climb up Black Hill from the Drove up to Compton Road when we lived in Kingsley Road. They would start at the bottom by the dog's home and come up to Kingsley Road, and they made up an island in the middle of the road. They would come up the left hand side, reverse down the right, and then back up again on the steepest part. That was an RAC rally. What date that was, I don't know, but it was before the war.
Were there agricultural shows? I saw mentioned somewhere as well.
I don't remember any agricultural shows in the park, no. Mm. Circuses they used to have, that sort of thing.
Mm. As they do now.
Carnivals. And carnival parades always used to finish up there.
So have you any sort of favourite memories of the park? Any particular ones?
Oh, I enjoyed working in the Manor Gardens when I was in there for a while. To go in there wet weather in little, I told you where them little greenhouses were. There was one lean-to greenhouses and then a rectangular one where you can still see the brickwork. Used to go in there from the vicarage, I suppose, wet weather.
How was walled garden in those days?
Oh, I think there was two or three people in there.
Gardeners,
yeah. Yeah, the greenhouse, potting shed and boilers.
Because with us coming up to the Jubilee as well, I read that the Coronation Garden for the Blind was opened in 1953.
Yeah, that was, 1953. That was, well, built previous to that. It opened in 1953. I didn't have anything to do with that. I was at Rodale then, and we went from Rodale to Stammer in 1957.
Mm.
But that was I remember Preston Manor lawn, the lawn in front of the manor house, being used for garden party. Lewis Cohen, he was the first one to use it in my time. We built a scaffolding ramp from the lawn over the top, because there was no railings there, it was just the ha-ha then, over the lawn down into the garden for the blind. And the cars would come up round by the chalet and down and let the guests out at the gate by the, at the top entrance to the garden for the blind. They would come round and be received by the mayor in that little summer house place. And they'd walk round from there and up the ramp over the ha-ha and into the garden for the garden party. I think there was two of those that year, Lewis Cohen. I think he had about, or he had four or five. He had two in his own garden at Updike Road. And he had one in Rottingdean Grange, one in the manor, there was one in Patcham Peace Garden. And then there was the official one, which the town paid for, in down in the pavilion grounds.
At your time in Preston Park, who was, what was the manor used for? Who was living there then?
The Roberts family were living there, I think, then.
Okay.
I know there was a Miss Roberts, who used to come round, and she seemed to have a great influence on what went on in the walled garden. They all seemed to be in awe of this Miss Roberts.
Was she quite a stern person? What was she like?
I saw her a couple of times. I never had a great deal to do with her.
No.
She was Henry Roberts' daughter then, I expect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great. Lovely. Were there any other areas that you wanted to cover, Sue?
No, I think that's it, unless there's anything else that you'd like to volunteer.
Can't think of anything, really.
No.
Great. Thank you very much.